We'll go ahead and start our meeting of the Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. And so the meeting is called to order. We'll recognize committee members that are probably easier to mention the ones that are not present. And I believe that Mike Massey will not be with us today. Paul Kuhn and John Nichols are with us by phone. And Bennett Sandlin is not with us. Eddie Arnold is not here. And that's it. Maybe I should have done it the flip side of that. But anyway, we will get started. I will say up front, as we do with every committee meeting, the policy for public comments. We welcome public comments during that are relevant to the issues that are on the agenda as we take the issues up. There will be a time at the end to have some general comments from the public. And I will add that we need to limit time if it goes too far. We want to have a reasonable amount of time for the public input, but we also need, as a committee, we need to handle the business that's on the agenda. So with that, I'll just ask for any general comments from committee members before we get started. All right, we'll try to roll through this. Item 2 on the agenda, it's considered advice to exclude Tier 1 applications for locations with certain NAICS codes, and NAICS is North American Industry Classification System. We brought this up in the last meeting. In fact, these next three items are just continued discussions of our prior meeting. And I'll say that I did some research, and in the end, I'm uncomfortable, I guess, putting certain companies on a list that it implies that they're on a suspect list or whatever. So that's kind of where I came out on this. But I'll be up front. I did come up with 14 NAICS codes that seems to be only environmental products, services, manufacturers of environmental products, those type of things. So I'll leave it at that unless anyone else has any more comments. It's on the agenda, but I remind you we don't have to spend any significant amount of time on it or vote on it, anything.
Mr. Don? Chairman, so just to clarify your comments, I think you're expressing that you don't see any recommendation for a change in advice at this time.
That's just, I'm only one committee member.
Right.
That's just my suggestion.
I'm kind of in the same spot you are on it. So.
Yeah, there's only 14. That's not material.
Right. So. And it kind of adds a new concept for everyone to get their hands around that might be confusing.
Right.
Confusing to my simple little mind. So.
Yeah, and I was a little concerned also about equal and uniform, and this kind of adds another level, in effect another tier, sort of, so, which is not in the code, and careful not to step
outside of it. And the statute and the rules already clearly say that folks who are manufacturing a pollution control are not eligible, right? I mean,
correct.
There's a sort of a blanket statement, so.
It just muddies everything, yeah.
All right. Any other comments on item 2?
Bob, this is Leo Scher. Does that mean we just move on from this agenda item, or we just agree to leave it as is?
I don't think we have to vote on it. Or is
it was just
as
follow
I see
up.
It? Yeah, just follow up discussion. And to answer your question, I think we can just move on unless someone disagrees. All right. Hearing no objection, we'll go forward. Item number 3, considers clarification of owns in 1131A. And I will say that I did more review from last time for my education and to help make me a little more prepared for this meeting. And in the end, my concern was, I'll just go ahead and say there is an item a very short proposal that's, I think, that you have. It's just a one-sentence item. By the way, Chance asked me to mention something earlier, that if you haven't registered for the meeting, please sign in. I think I must have it in my stack. I didn't see it there. Yeah, it's very short. And Paul and John were talking about it's titled Proposed Revision to TCEQ Prop 2 Guidance Reapplicant. And it seems, I don't know if you have the guidance there in front of you, but I was looking for a place where this might fit. And it seems, and I welcome input from TCEQ staff also, it seems to fit between the effective date and the eligible property equipment in the guidance. And the concern, or what we're trying to accomplish here, is basically just clarify that if an owner, the law does say owner, but I think the intent is that an agent for the owner could also file for the owner. It could be a tax consultant, a CPA firm. You know, they're not actually owners, or it could be someone that's a beneficial owner that the actual owner delegates as a agent, designates. There you go.
I guess we don't have the guidance in our paper packets that we handed out this morning.
I can let you borrow it. I'll take it with me.
This is pretty self-standing paragraph, though. I mean, it's a short sentence. It's
right.
Not like it needs to be. You need too much context around it. This isn't a change from what you currently do, is it? Right. I mean, you can always have almost all legal documents. You can have a lawyer sign for you or an agent sign for you. This doesn't change the status of who has to own the property. Am I right?
Right. It's also a clarification when you talk about own. I mean, some properties are owned by might have eight owners, or there might be a joint venture 50-50 owner, but one is, for example, the tax matters partner that it's charged to handle all the taxes.
Yeah.
So it seems like that who's ever delegated is that
Roland,
that person.
How does this affect a lease back? Would that the person that's operating it become the agent of the owner? That hasn't qualified in the past, has it?
If the owner delegated them or designated them to be the agent.
Well, doesn't the owner have to be the operator?
I would say no. Sale leaseback is a financing arrangement.
I think the staff's opinion of the past, they're here, they can speak for themselves, but I think that if the owner has to be the operator, then this would not, I mean, this convolutes the intent.
We're going to borrow that for a few minutes.
Okay.
Get her up from there.
I guess I have a different interpretation of the rules. It says the owner has to file, but it says that the qualifying property has to be used in a qualifying manner. So, as I see it, really, as long as the owner or the owner's agent is using the property in a qualified manner, and the application is filed in the name of the owner, then it should then go through the normal review determination process to determine whether it warrants the exemption.
I personally think that we're circumventing our we're trying to put our own thought process into the law, and I don't think that's what we're are asked to do. I think that the staff needs to make up their own mind and with their advice of their legal counsel, make that interpretation. This is a legal interpretation.
Staff,
I agree with Roland on that. If there's some idea that this would change the law about or change the way it works around the who is the owner and bring that lease issue into it, well, that's, again, that is a legal issue that's I'm not sure the TCEQ, and the TCEQ has to make it. I agree with Roland's statement on that, but it gets to the laws about tax exemptions.
For the record, Tim Reedy, TCEQ, Environmental Law Division. Again, where we've been on this is that we've considered the owner of the property to be that party that has title to the property. And I know that it's on this agenda, you know, with making distinctions between different types of leases, capital versus operating. So if that's something that needed, you know, if this committee wanted to weigh in on, that would be welcome.
I guess I'm confused by this advice here. I got the impression this was saying is that an agent may file on behalf of an owner. But I think, you know, Roland's raising, is there some way, is this interpreting that the agent can be the recipient of the designation?
Right, and when we're saying agent, I think that could use some clarification, at least for our end. I mean, if the agent of the owner is the property tax consultant, I think that's one thing. If the agent of the owner is a lessee in, you know, either a capital lease or an operating lease, then that may be another situation.
My thought was is if he's filling out the application and the application is in the owner's name, then he's acting in behalf of that, as long as he had a fiduciary to do so.
Well, at this time, a tax rep can file an application, an agent can file an application on behalf of the owner. We don't need any clarification on that. If you're trying to change the law, I think you need to talk to legislatures and let them do it next session.
No, my intent is not to try to change the law. I mean, I agree. The actual law is through the legislative process, but I see, speaking of the law, for our committee is to advise the commission regarding the implementation of this section, which is 1131. So I think we can advise things toward the implementation. And as Tim just said, I think they welcome comments on this. I hope I stated that right. But I thought of options of capital lease, operating lease. Operating lease is simply, it's like rent. A capital lease is nothing more than a financial arrangement. It's like if you got a mortgage on your home or mortgage on your business. It's just a different way to mortgage that. It seems that, and again, I'm not looking at every angle. That's why we're bringing it here. But it seems that an agent or something like an agent, if we need another term, that's okay. But that would, I'm not trying to get out of the intent of the law, which is this seems to focus it back to the use of the property. So if the property is police control and the owner or the agent for the owner applies for it, then it's eligible for positive use determination. Does that help or not?
Is there really anything that's broke right now that we need to do something to fix it?
Well, I think there have been some decisions, and the capital lease item was one. I don't know how common it is. I don't know if staff can talk about it. That's another question. We've discussed this for like three meetings, and if it's not a huge issue, I'm okay with not spending a lot of time on it.
If we're getting... capital lease issue, I mean, that's one that there's a pretty good division on this committee, you know, about that. And the impression to us is that we're trying to take fundamental concepts around property tax law and change them for this program, for this Prop 2 program, which has been one of the problems we've had with this program from the beginning has been the desire to throw out all the precedent and all the structure of law and process that we use around tax exemptions in order to expand the properties that are eligible for this tax exemption. And, it's not something I think we're not going to get unanimous agreement on trying to do that. We think that this is, I agree with Roland, this is a, there's a lot of legal issues around when you are eligible for tax exemptions. And this idea that you can change your business structure and, you know, for your you know, whatever reasons you want to do so, and have a bank take over the property and have it in there, be the title owner and actually own the property because of credit issues, and not have that impact exemptions, it impacts all your other exemption statuses. Those decisions matter. And that law has been around for a long time. And it doesn't make sense to us to mess with that. And it doesn't make sense to us, even the concept of TCQ can mess with that.
I think you're right. We probably do have a, in your comment, that we have a divide among our committee. And I tend to go back to the basic intent, if it's pollution control and it meets or exceeds a rule or regulation.
Well, let's quote the folks who first brought it to the legislature, and let's quote their stated intent: control your own pollution. The property you use to control your own pollution. So, you know, it fails the intent. We can keep changing what we say the intent is to broaden the scope to this so that, you know, nothing gets taxed.
We're coding something I haven't seen. Can you provide that information next time, or can you send out that you're quoting?
Yes. Matter of fact, the last meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee, the executive director of Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, giving testimony to the Ways and Means Committee, cited that exact same statement again. And he did it two summers ago to the Ways and Means Committee. Every time this comes up in front of the legislature and there's discussion, and I think that association, and I respect them very much for this, have been very consistent in referencing back to their original intent. It was about controlling your own pollution, the property you use to control your pollution, not the pollution of someone using your products, not the pollution. And, you know, you're here, and you'll probably want to, we can hear from TTARA as a representative here in the audience. But that's what I hear them say, and that's where we thought we reached agreement with them on back in 1991, was it, when we started this? And
it's my impression there might be a disconnect from what is said and how you interpret it. But, John, you're welcome to comment.
When it's appropriate.
Sure.
John Kelly with Texas Taxpayers Research Association. And Don is exactly right. That has been our position and will continue to be our position, that you only get this exemption.
I'm sorry. Just the recording.
Is that working?
Yes.
Shall I start over?
Sure.
For the record, John Kennedy with Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. As I was saying, Don is exactly right, and we will continue to maintain that position, that it has to be pollution that you're causing that you get the exemption for, period, in the manufacturing process or whatever it is that you're doing. But the way that I see this, Don, this suggestion does not change the beneficiary of the exemption. The beneficiary of the exemption will still be the titled owner of the property. If it's a bank, it's the bank. If it's a manufacturer, it's a manufacturer. I was troubled when I saw this item on the agenda for exactly the reasons that you talked about. When you start trying to change the definition of who owns the property or what owns means and how that might be worked around and so forth to let in to expand this provision beyond what we all contemplated it to be. But this suggestion, I think, fits perfectly within the spirit. The exemption under this suggestion still goes to the owner. If you have a situation where the bank
owns the property now because of a debt situation, but there's an operator that the bank has leased the property to. It's an operating asset. They're operating. The bank owns it. Under this suggestion, as I see it, the lessee who's operating the property, who has the technical knowledge about what the process is, a banker don't know squat about environmental protection, will prepare the application on behalf of the bank. The bank will submit it. The exemption will go to the bank, the owner, the titled owner of the property. And then if the bank decides to let the lessee be the beneficiary of that, so be it. If they don't, so be it. That's for them to work out between them two. We're not, I think this keeps intact the principle that the exemption goes to the owner of the property, period. That's the only one that can benefit. But I don't think it really makes any difference in that regard who it is who makes the application on behalf of the owner, a lessee, an agent, Greg's Duffenfeld, whoever does it, doesn't matter. And I think there's, in my view, Don, there is support for that in the language of the statute. The statute says property that a person owns and that is used for pollution control.
Right.
If there had been some intended to be some umbilical connection between ownership and use, that language would have said that a property owner owns and uses, or the owner owns and uses the property. I will suggest to you that the plain reading of that grammar is a twofold test. I got to own it and be the beneficiary. It makes perfect sense. This is a property tax exemption. It goes to the owner.
Right.
And the property has to be used for pollution control. It doesn't make any difference if the owner uses it or somebody else uses it, in my view. And I think that supports this suggestion that it doesn't really matter who makes the application as long as the benefit inures to the owner of the property.
John, Roland Beamer. What you're saying then is that that parenthetical remark that the person owns would just be, can be deleted, and it would mean exactly what you want to say.
I'm not sure I'm following you, Roland.
Well, if you read it, a person entitled to an exemption from taxation of all a part of real property and of real property and personal property that is used wholly or partly as a facility, device, or method for the control of air, water, or land pollution. That says exactly what you want it to say, but that's not what it says. It says that a person owns.
Right, because a property tax exemption cannot inure to anybody else. A property tax exemption only benefits the owner of the property. So that's why it says owns, and that is used. The whole purpose of this program, as we've talked about before, from the beginning, was to say if the government requires you to add equipment that controls pollution, we will not make the owner of that property pay property taxes on that added value, period. And the test for whether the owner had to pay taxes on that added value was whether it was used for pollution control. If I own property, it's being used for pollution control, I don't have to pay the taxes on the additional investment. Period. Doesn't mean that I have to own it and use it. I'm paying the taxes on it. And this was to provide relief to the owner of the property from the taxes that were due on pollution control property if it's used for prevention. That was the purpose of the program. And that's why this worded this way. I don't understand why this is an issue. It doesn't open up the program for any significant expansion. The owner is still the only one that gets the benefit of the exemption. They own it, they pay the property taxes. And what the legislature has said and the people passed in the constitutional amendment was, if you're an owner of such property, You don't have to pay taxes on it if the government made you do it to control pollution.
If the pollution is not the owner's pollution, are we deviating from where we started?
No, we do not. We certainly do not, because that's a different test. We have, as Cyrus pointed out, we have a specific prohibition against that.
So you're saying that if it is not the owner's pollution, he doesn't qualify.
If the regulation is not a regulation of the owner's pollution that you're meeting or exceeding.
Yeah, right.
If it's the lessee's pollution, not the owner's.
No. If it's the lessee, if I own the property, okay, and in order to be able to lease it as a refinery operation or whatever, I have to install this equipment, I get the benefit of the exemption. It doesn't make any difference who operates the refinery. I'm the owner. I had to buy it. I had to install it in order to allow me to make a use of that property in that fashion. I get the exemption.
I try to put this in context of other property tax law, right?
Sure.
Which you're very familiar with. So I started thinking about, well, what are some other examples? Homestead exemption.
How about a use valuation of agricultural property? Most of the agricultural property valuation in this state is leased land.
Yeah, I understand, but that's not really an exemption, right?
Well, we can argue that.
Different way of valuing.
We can argue it one way or another.
Different method of valuing.
That's right.
Ag property using productive value versus market value. So it's, but on a homestead exemption, if I sell my house and lease my house, no one gets a homestead exemption anymore.
No, because the law...
I don't get one, and the lesser doesn't get one.
Don, because the law says you must occupy the house as your principal residence. This law does not say I have to operate the plant. It says I have to own the property, and the property has to be used for pollution control. It does not speak to operational...
If I outsource the operating, which I think is what you refer to there,
right?
I'm not sure that's the same to me as transferring the property to someone else and leasing it from them. If I own the property and I pay Cyrus to operate it, right?
Right.
God help you.
I want to be and I pay him. I still have a right.
I still have a right to
my pollution control exemption. But if I sell my property to Cyrus,
right,
lease it from him,
then Cyrus gets the exemption. He's the new owner. You don't get it anymore. Cyrus gets it. This still goes to the owner of the property. I would never suggest that the benefit should go to anybody except the owner of the property.
I'll add, not to muddy the water, but like you said earlier, if the owner chooses to have in the lease to roll those benefits to the lessee, then that's another issue.
Right.
That's up to them.
That's between those two parties. If you lease your refinery to Cyrus and he pays a lease for it, you own it, you have to install property in order for him to be able to operate it as a refinery, or he ain't going to lease it from you. You get the exemption. Now, if you decide to pass that along as savings to Cyrus, so be it. If you decide to put that in your pocket and keep it, that's between you two in the lease negotiation. That has nothing to do with the status of the exemption.
I don't think there's some real thinking that needs to be done on this, because there's the important concept, I think, for us, obviously, is that, and you and I have talked about this for 20 years now, is the need to be able to have some bright lines around the scope of this exemption process. Right?
Absolutely. And I think the bright line here is in order to get the benefit, you have to be the owner. The benefit can only benefit the owner.
But the question is then, if I've just got a paper transaction to
take over owning that? Am I the polluter? Am I the regulated polluter? That's the question. Is if I pay Cyrus to operate, I'm still a regulated polluter. I own this polluting facility or this facility, right?
Right.
But if I sell it to Cyrus,
yep,
and he leases it back to me to use to produce widgets,
right?
And I am I'm the regulated polluter, but he's the owner. That's a different distinction for me.
I don't see how that makes any difference with regard to the property tax exemption.
He doesn't have pollution to regulate. You're saying
but I own the property. He's using my property in a fashion that I'm going to require him to do legally.
I'm using the
right
in my scenario.
He sells it.
I've sold it to.
Okay, you sold it to
Cyrus. I transferred it to Cyrus, and I'm leasing it to produce widgets with.
Right.
And I'm polluted, and I have to meet environmental regulations.
Correct.
Okay. And I'm using his property to. Meet environmental regulations that apply to me.
To abate your pollution.
Yeah.
To abate my pollution. Well, now we've breached this historical bright line we've tried to draw, which is this is an exemption for property you use to mitigate your pollution. This is my pollution and his property. That's how I'm viewing this.
No, what we're talking about is pollution that you cause at the site that you're doing the activity.
Right.
Right? This doesn't change that in the least. We're still talking about the pollution that you cause at the site by operating this equipment. The ownership does not matter with regard to the test of whether it's pollution control, Don, and the benefit only inures to the owner.
Well, you and I have always talked about this and will continue to, I hope.
I hope so as well.
I don't want to belabor the discussion here because I'm still seeing a distinction, and I'm still seeing a distinction there that you're trying to convince me doesn't exist.
No. Let me see if I can make it simple. What difference would it make if Greg submitted it on part of the owner or the lessee submitted it on part of the owner, the application? What difference would it make?
That part, when you say about who submits it, if you submit it on behalf of the owner.
That's all this does.
We have agents submitting stuff on behalf of owners all the time. Well, you say that, but then we get to this bank lease issue. And
no, that's not part of it. That ain't part of this. That's not part of this. This is just who can submit the application. This is trying to get to a situation like the bank, Don. The bank doesn't know diddle about this. They don't want to learn about it. They just want to hold the asset. So they're not going to make the application.
My question is, again, I asked this earlier, there's not been a problem with agents filing the exemption in the past. Why do we need to change something?
I have no idea. But
if that be the case, I make a motion that we move on. If we don't need to do it, let's just don't waste the time. I've got things to do.
The part that bothers me is whether this first sentence as it reads is accurate and true and understandable when I read it, that the person must own it, but doesn't say and the person must use it. To me, this statement is person owns and that is used. To me, anybody can use it as long as it's for that purpose.
That's correct.
So, to me,
but the benefit part of this only goes to the owner.
Yes. So, to me, this is clear to me that it doesn't matter who owns it. If I own, let me give you a sort of a radical example. If I own a chemical plant, fits in this room here, I may own it, but I'm not really going to operate it. I'm going to hire 5 men and women to run it around the clock.
Are you going to lease it to somebody?
I'm going to hire somebody that I can outsource it to. So, because I physically can't run any chemical plant just with one little person, it's not possible.
If the property taxes aren't paid, who gets the lien?
Pardon?
If the property taxes aren't paid, who gets the lien? The lessee or the lessor? Or the owner or the guy who runs it?
The owner. So, you know, I guess to me is, you know, we're trying to argue about who's running a chemical plant. It's like, you know, driving by any chemical plant. The owner's not out there 24/7 running it. I think we got an argument that doesn't hold water. It's anybody that can use it, in my view.
And I just don't see a distinction between me outsourcing the operation of the plant and me leasing the plant to somebody to operate it.
So if I run if I have a business providing environmental mitigation services.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's always been our intent that that's not to be exempt, right?
Absolutely.
But how does that not conflict completely with what you've just said? What we've just said? It has always been, I mean...
Because this equipment qualifies, the service does not.
Well, services aren't taxed in this case. So it was always been about the equipment used by a servicer.
Okay.
It's always been about the property that a servicer used, right?
Right.
And if we're saying it doesn't matter who uses the property or whose pollution is being mitigated, we're crossing that line. I see us crossing that line. I don't want us to to belabor the point, but it looks to me like we're starting to go into here, and you know from our history that this statute and this constitutional provision is not written the way we wanted it. Right?
Yeah, but as many of them are not.
You rammed a lot of this down our throat.
Hey!
And
it tasted good, didn't it?
Yeah.
No. It's been tasting good ever since.
We didn't get this written the way we wanted, but we did have understandings, and we've had those understandings consistently reinforced by the legislature, consistently when we've had to go back, when we've had issues, and you and I have agreed on those.
Correct.
Right? And I think we've had and one of them has been this concept of mitigate your own pollution, and that's the issue that we have to get to. We think we're trying to read this in a way that my colleague here just did that absolutely blows that to pieces. That blows that concept to pieces. To say that, hey, I just got to own it, and then anyone else can use it to mitigate pollution. Anyone can. So I guess we're getting back to that issue that we've worked through, and we'll continue to work with y'all's group on it. You know, my group will work with y'all's group on that to find in ways to nuance that so that, from our view, it gets to if I get a different operator, you know, I'm still entitled, but if now all of a sudden I'm no longer the owner of the property being used to mitigate my pollution, well, then I don't have that exemption. So, again, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but I'm missing it. Maybe you need to, you know, beat me about the head and shoulders some more at some different time to bring me around, if it's possible.
You and I know better than that. But I don't see anything.
I'm with you. If this is only about who applies,
that's all this is about, in my view.
We just are picking up that there's more to this than it's trying to get to some decisions that TCEQ has made about in some bank ownership situations, and we don't want to get to those situations. I personally am comfortable with advice and TCEQ practices that recognize that other people other than the owner can apply on behalf of the owner.
I think that's all this is intended to do, in my view.
I just don't want to get to that bank case. I don't want to get to that case that was decided in that bank case.
The problem is something that seems simple that you and I might think means one other thing, when lawyers get a hold of it, can interpret it a different way, and that's what we're worried about.
We've got an attorney who was active in that very issue.
I can guarantee you something.
Okay,
we are going to be in complete agreement.
I would like to. Before we move off this issue, is I'd like to hear from TCQ if you prepare to have a few comments or somebody.
My name is Bernardo Garcia with the Harris County Appraisal District, and yes, I do have.
You have it turned on? Sorry.
Yeah, there it is. Bernardo Garcia with the Harris County Appraisal District. And in terms of the real-life application of such a wording and such a change, let me give you some real-life scenarios that we have had property owners who come in who are leasing a piece of equipment, doesn't matter what it is. They're leasing something, whether it's a widget or whether it's a facility. And in their contract, you know, the owner says, all right, I'm leasing it to Joe Blow Incorporated, and I'm also designating Joe Blow as my agent. And that's the problem that I have. Okay? Now, either one of those under the tax code can make an application through an agent, through a property tax consultant or an in-house tax agent. So I don't think that language is needed. I think it muddles it up. But let me give you a broader issue. That if you read that the person owns and that is used in the interpretation that is attempted to be proffered here, it makes the second sentence of that section absolutely meaningless. You might as well take a pen and scratch that whole second sentence out. Because then the person is not entitled to an exemption solely on the basis that the person manufactures or produces. Well, who's that going to be? The owner or the agent? The owner or the lessee? You might as well take it out. And not wanting to, you know, I agree with Don Lee that this thing needs to be postponed. However, I don't think that the committee or the commission has the legal authority or the legal mandate to change or make changes that expand or even restrict what the legislature has done. I think that a legislature.
I don't think anybody's proposing that.
Well, I think when you're saying, or
this
agent,
is just an advisory board.
Well, it's an advisory board, but you're proposing something that to change those rules over there, and I think that is unless the legislature goes back and they've had two opportunities to do that and they've not done that, other than to add a school board member to this thing, I think it's fraught with danger to do that at this point in time. To be honest with you. Because it seems like adding that language and allowing lessees or contingent owners to do that is problematic. Another real-life example is that some of the lessees who have come in and tried to apply under that, and it's the exact same scenario that Donnelly indicated, he owned the facility, sold it to a bank, then the bank leased it back to him. Don Lee comes back and says, well, see, for all purposes and intents, I am the owner, except I just deeded it. I transferred it to that bank, and then they leased it back. Well, why did they do that?
Fine.
I'll tell you why they did that. Because they didn't want to do it under a deed of trust. They didn't want to do it under a financing agreement. You know why? Because they wanted to be the first creditor in line. And when they take that business decision, then, by God, they can't have their cake and eat it too.
That's right.
And that's what they're doing. In order for Don Lee to keep getting that exemption because he's the owner, he needs to get the bank to say, here, take a first lien. Here, you know, do a financing statement. But that bank won't because they want to make sure that they are a super secured creditor. And that's the only thing that's driving it, folks. That is a real life example of not just one, but two or three that I've run across and that we've had to fight. On that basis that you're not the owner. You deeded it. Here's a deed transferring it to you. Here's a UCC statement saying you've transferred it. A bill of sale. It's gone. You are no longer the legal owner. If that facility blows up, who's going to be liable? Don Lee or the bank?
But are you talking about an existing application? Are you talking about if somebody, let's say they do this transfer?
It's a prior. It's a prior application.
But if
the
new guy comes in and files an application for the owner.
Absolutely.
Then it's not. Then this issue is not there, correct?
Well, it is there because they claim they're an agent. Because, well, we're just leasing it. And in our lease agreement from the bank, they've designated us as their agent. That's the problem.
But the
but they're not the owners.
But my understanding of that case is that the bank was the owner, not the operator, and therefore
right.
they weren't entitled
it's absolute,
to
they're not the operator.
They're not entitled to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And they don't want to be the operator for liability reasons.
This is a legal issue
yeah.
that TCEQ staff needs to take care of on their own.
Because yeah, I think we're back on that yeah. own and operate, and
that's
contrary to
deal.
What John was just talking about. Where it says you own and operate, it says you own and that is used.
What bothers me about all this discussion is, and all I remember reading, I've never heard anything about capital lease and this and that, and the way it's financed or the way the deal business transaction's being developed and the contracts are written. I've never seen any of that in this code. I mean, to me, that's all being introduced when it shouldn't be, because it's if a person owns it, which somebody's going to own it, and that is used.
Well,
so we're introducing more, in my view, discussing all the financing possibilities, which are beyond my expertise, that is more complicating to what's written here when it's very simple and clear already.
If they want to push that, I think you're right. But the legislature has dealt with similar issues. We talked about a homestead. There were situations where people sold property to somebody else under a contract for deed, unrecorded. The person that was buying it could not get a homestead. Why? Because the appraisal district said, there's no deed under your name. And that was a big problem. The legislature had to come in and amend it, Chapter 11 of the Texas Tax Code, and said, we're going to allow purchasers under a contract for deed to get a homestead exemption. The legislature had to step in to do that because of the issue of legal title. And that's all that I'm saying, is that if the legislature wants to allow lessees to get, you know, pollution control exemptions, they're going to have to stick it in there. And any kind of tortured interpretation of what that segment means is not going to help. I think the legislature is the one that has to make that determination, that public policy determination, that, yes, we do want people that are in financing arrangements and they can hold their public hearings, find out what the tax losses and tax revenue losses are going to be, and they can make that decision.
Again, the exemption goes to the owner.
That's our purview.
I think everybody's in agreement. The exemption goes to the owner.
I have a little bit of a problem with, we've had cases and decisions and such. I have trouble with changing something that really contradicts that without it being, you know, legislated or decided in the courts or something. And changing the way this reads without some of that direction, because there's already been decisions made, I'm very uncomfortable with doing anything because of that.
And I agree, I don't see us calling for a vote today on this. This is not it. But before we move on, I want to give TCEQ staff a chance. You don't have to, but if you want to comment on this, if it helps or doesn't.
Chance Gooden for the record, TCEQ, Minister of the Tax Relief Program. I think you fully vetted both sides of the argument, so there's no reason to go through our stance. I think our stance is pretty clear. We just need to decide what this statement really means. If it's a matter of who files the application on the behalf of the owner, that's not an issue. We let anybody file the application on behalf of the owner. But when it comes to who gets the exemption, we give the exemption to the owner. As you know, we have tons and tons of environmental rules out there, and there's our stance is we hold the owner responsible. They're the ones that are required to abide by those rules. So when we do enforcement in our agency, regardless if there's someone operating it for them, we're going to hold the owner responsible for any penalties. So we kind of keep that consistent through our agency with this program as well. You're right, this language is up for interpretation. Obviously, we've discussed this many advisory committees, so maybe we do need to get some input from the ledge on what they actually meant on those four words in the beginning of that paragraph. So,
Can I ask a question? Does the addition of these words, does it solve any problem or help you in any way?
Well, I'm kind of confused with the statement, what like I said, the statement, what it means. If it's just a matter of who can file the application, that
you already know,
that's not a big deal to us. But if it's going into some tax laws, that we're an environmental agency, we don't know tax laws, so I would leave that up to the tax laws to decide if an agent is an owner or what. I don't know. There's many tax laws out there, but we keep the plain reading of that you know, the owner is compelled or required to install this pollution control, so therefore they qualify for the exemption, plainly put.
And if it's multiple owners, you would consider one of those owners that's an operator? That how that's interpreted?
Again, we leave that up to the appraisal districts and the taxing units to decide how they're going to get their exemption. Truly, all we really care about is if the equipment is used for pollution control, really, we have to know who owns it to know who to give that use determination for. I assume that the taxing units all across the state go into great detail verifying who actually owns that. I mean, sometimes we just take the information on the application itself. We have no way of going and looking at all these financial documents and verifying all that stuff. We leave that in the hands of the appraisal district and the taxing unit. So if something slips through, that's the appraisal district's opportunity to appeal that. And that we've had that in the past. So, again, it's kind of this gatekeeper in this legislative bill that we have to deal with. So
okay, but just to clarify, as of now, someone that's not the owner that files an application, that's just informal. That's not any guidance or anything anywhere.
No, anybody can file for anybody on behalf of anybody.
Okay,
we look at that section in there that talks about who owns it.
Okay.
Well. The contact information and application is generally who is representing the owner or or is acting as the agent.
Like I said earlier, if it ain't broke, why do we need to fix it?
I'm okay with that. If they want to keep it informal, we don't have to put it in there. Any other comments before we move on?
Are we through with it?
No, you're welcome to comment.
No, I'm just meaning, are we through with the agenda item? Is it going to come back next time, or is it, are we?
I don't plan to bring it back, but, of course, any committee member can contact me and ask for things to be on the agenda. So
I'm sure it'll come back.
I can't promise that's what I'm saying.
Not here, but it'll probably come back, through an application and then the commissioners because.
Well, that's
the process that it needs to go through.
That's the process it needs to go through. I don't have a problem with that.
Because everybody's talking about a case. And it's like, it seems like there's just going to be more that'll come.
I do have a question, but in Harris County, was this one that there was a determination letter filed, and then they gave it to y'all, and then y'all denied it? Okay.
That's the case.
We've talked about it before, yeah.
Okay. Same.
Okay, any other comments on item 3? Then we'll go to 4. As you see, Rob has a memo. I don't know if we want to start with that, or we can start with recycling equipment. I just put that back on the agenda because the TCEQ staff had that on the request for advice, and we've talked about it. I don't think we've done anything, any advice on it, and I'm okay if we don't. But I just put it back on here in case we need to talk about it. Anybody have any comments about recycling? All right. Then best management practice. Rob, would you speak to that?
Yeah, I guess this was sent out, I guess, fairly late last night, maybe. And then it's here for everybody. Really, the point of this is just kind of a conceptual sort of discussion topic that can sort of hopefully shed a little bit of light on this best management practice, I guess, concept that we talked about a little bit at the last meeting. The point of this, I guess, is to kind of bring up, I guess, definitions of best management practices, give some examples, talk about, I guess, kind of some sort of idea of how, you know, an applicant could potentially, I guess, show that regulatory enforceable driver behind why that particular property or equipment was installed or purchased, and maybe give kind of a starting point or a jump off point for providing advice to TCEQ on how to implement that piece.
Any comments on this? I realize you haven't had a lot of time to review it.
In general, my one concern about best management practices, although there are pollution control things in best management practices, there are things that are not. And if we do anything, we need to be very, very careful that we do not include things that are pollution control, that are not pollution control. I think most of the things in best management practices end up on a tier one list anyway, don't they?
A lot of them do, things like stormwater ponds and stuff like that. So and I'm not suggesting that I tried to kind of go with this is not. Anything that's not pollution control, I mean, that's up to the applicant to show that, yes, it is pollution control and describe why it is. And then, you know, TCEQ to kind of weigh that on their decision. If it's something that's not on the Tier 1 list, then that burden of, you know, proving that it's pollution control falls on the applicant anyway. So this is really just – the point of this is really just to provide some maybe guidance on how someone could cite the regulation or requirement that dictates that they installed those BMPs.
Do you mind if I ask you to expound on a thing – something here? Because, you know, when I read this, you make the point about – it's about the property that is used for – in a best – practice. And I understand. Sometimes I get it and I read it and I say, wait, he's talking about getting an exemption because of a best management practice and not because of property being used for a best management practice. And so that's where I get. But I want to ask you about like a particular sentence in here. Many examples of BMPs are cited. I've listed here those that involve property. Locate materials, equipment, and activities in such a way that leaks are contained in existing containment and diversion systems. In that example, what property is the exempt property?
That would be what page are you on? I'm sorry.
I'm on the second page.
Oh, I see. Existing. I guess it would really be the existing containment and diversion systems, not
the materials, equipment, and activities that are being arranged.
Yes, right.
The containment stuff. The stuff exactly. You had to go in and
exactly.
put in to contain spills and stuff.
Right, right.
I think that I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that was my only thing on this, is that making it clear of what property we're talking about and what we're not. I mean, obviously, you know our issues around all that, so...
So ultimately, what are we talking about here? Are we actually talking about doing something to the rules, or maybe just putting some advice out there for people filing?
I think this is more like a guidance suggestion. That's really more to the point of how, you know, where it says list the environmental regulations that this property is designed to meet or exceed on the application, right? And that would be, you know, well, where's the environmental regulation that dictates that I install a stormwater pond? There isn't really one, because a stormwater pond is a best management. It's by definition a best management practice. So how would I list, what regulation do I list? And I think the regulation you would list, and that's where I'm trying to go with this, is, you know, they would list the regulation that requires them to have a stormwater permit, and then in that stormwater permit, it dictates that they install best management practices, or it dictates that they have a stormwater pollution prevention plan, that part of the requirements of that plan are that you put in best management practices. So it's kind of this, I guess, this long chain down to where you eventually have the requirement to install that stormwater pond. It may not specifically be called out in a regulation, but there is an enforceable requirement that you'd have it.
So you envision on the application where it asks for the citation, it would be something like best management practice as required by permit.
As required by, as part of my SWIP, as required by my permit, which is dictated by 30, you know, TAC, what, you know, whatever the citation happens to be, if that makes sense.
Should we ask staff to give us their perspective?
Okay, go ahead. Any comments from staff?
Yeah, Tim Reedy, TCQ, Environmental Law Division. Again, I've read over the memo with maybe one slight amendment to the example provided on that last page. I thought it was very similar to the guidance document, you know, put forth maybe in February. I didn't see anything that would be fundamentally different. And the one amendment that I would add to the example where someone was citing the MSGP, you know, in that example, somewhere along the line, I think as on the executive director's end, we'd like to see a reference to either 40 CFR 122.26 or 30 TAC section 281.25, which adopts that by reference, which is basically the requirement to, you know, gain coverage under the MSGP. But I think that's just what you were speaking to there.
That's what I was going at.
Right. But I do think that follows the chain of what we would like to see as the agency. I'm a regulated entity. I'm regulated pursuant to the multi-sector general permit. As part of the multi-sector general permit, I'm required to implement a stormwater pollution prevention plan. Here is a copy of my stormwater pollution prevention plan. Here is a copy of my authorization showing that I have coverage under the MSGP. Here are the regulations that require me to have coverage under that permit. And we would evaluate, you know, we would evaluate that information. But, and I do think, you know, because of stormwater pollution prevention plans and the nature of them, I think there are some things that are very clearly best management practices. I think because it's a document that's kept on site and developed by staff without any upfront review by executive director staff, there is a potential there for abuse. There could always be something included in a stormwater pollution prevention plan, a piece of equipment that's not necessarily pollution control equipment. I think staff would, you know, has the expertise and would be able to weed those applications out and review them on a case-by-case basis. But I do think this gives us at least areas of that we could include in a guidance document as far as appropriate ways to cite certain best management practices.
Tim, I may have misunderstood your earlier comment that this aligns with guidance. Does it just align with guidance, or do you think it's already in guidance?
Well, I think we could always put in more in our guidance document as what appropriate steps would be when citing a best management practice.
I think you're talking about this.
Oh, yeah, the guidance
analysis
document I was talking about earlier was this one that was. I didn't see any. What I was saying is I didn't see anything in Robert's memo here that was drastically in conflict with what we'd provided earlier.
Right, and I guess that, you know, that's the other thing is basically supporting the staff analysis and saying, yeah, I agree. I think that's the approach that is logical.
Okay. Do we need, in, do you recommend that we take a formal vote on this, or that we basically agree with your analysis and maybe take the best of both, or?
It can be in whatever form you guys think is appropriate. I mean, we're all here today. If everyone's in agreement that this is the way to go, that's fine. It could be in the form of a formal motion. If you guys wanted to get as specific as we think you should include this specific language, I mean, that's really at the advisory committee's discretion.
Okay, so this is a discussion. We probably do need some specific language to go into the guidance before we advise. Is that where we're going?
It's either way, I mean, in time to review it.
Yes, right.
Robert, is your intent to try to add something to the guidance document along these lines?
Basically, yeah. I mean, really, the intent is to say that, you know, I would almost move to say that we would effectively support the staff analysis that's in their document here. So that's effectively what both, you know, the memo that I sent out, their staff analysis are pretty much in agreement along the lines of how you would cite a best management practice, or at least the regulatory driver behind that. And I think
but what I'm seeing is both are good discussions, but it seems like we need some language to go into guidance.
And if necessary, I could take a stab at taking Robert's memo and the earlier staff guidance document, preparing some proposed language to add to the guidance document, distributing that to the committee members for their review.
I'd be more comfortable with that, just giving us another bite at the apple.
I would too.
That'd be helpful. Okay.
The end product would be what?
The end product would be language that would be included in RG 461, the draft guidance document.
Okay.
So I would make a motion that TCEQ staff would take their previous analysis, Rob's language, and come back to the committee with a proposal on that would be added to the guidance document so that we have an opportunity to look at it and comment.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second it.
All right. It's been motioned and seconded. Do you need just further discussion on the item? No discussion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no.
All right. Motion passes. A great motion because it doesn't require us to do anything for the.
All right.
I've just got too much on my plate.
Any other discussion on BMP? Sounds like we just finally made some decision.
Back to them.
Decisions of the way.
And again, like I said, with the recycling equipment, the eligibility of hazardous material storage areas was on their earlier list, so I left it on here. Do we want to discuss this any further? All right. Sounds like we don't. Any other advice that, and I'll ask TCEQ, is there could have been something new. I guess you'd have already proposed it to us to consider. Anything else? Okay. All right. Anything else on item four before we move forward? All right. I have item five on the agenda for the annual report, just to remind you that it's out there and we're required by our bylaws to have an annual report that basically says that summarizes our activities, and I don't have the law right in front of me, but basically it's the benefits of our committee and financial reporting, its expense statements, that type of thing. I noticed that they had on the table out there and in the package the 2010 report. I plan to draft something very similar, but of course put in 2011 activities and send it to you in time to review it, and then we'll vote on it in the next time around. So that's all I wanted to say. Do you have any comments on this? That was more of an update than anything. All right.
Okay. One issue that should be addressed is, I would think, is the makeup of the committee. You know, because aren't some of our terms up, and I don't know what nominations have been. I don't know where we. Maybe this is a different item, but where are we in that process of? Because some folks, I think mine is up at the end of this year, my term.
Me too.
So I don't know what is that on our agenda, or where would that be addressed in an annual report, or that's a separate.
What I would tell you would be hearsay. I'd be glad to hear directly from TCEQ.
Chance Gooden, for the record, it's intimate. December 7th, we are going to agenda, and they're going to hear the appointments that the nominations that were made. So the appointments will be made at that point.
So would we want to include that in the annual report, that discussion?
Yes.
Yes. And what about the law that was passed that would add a school board member? Would that?
That is part of that.
That is part of that. So we'd want to address that. That was my only point. We'd want to address that in the annual report.
Okay. Anything else about the annual report?
As far as the departing members, can we do something like slap them on the back or something before we send them out the door?
I've asked about that for Eddie, and I think who did I talk to? Ron or Chance? I think he's working on it. Get something from the commission.
You don't have confirmation, final confirmation on who's departing or not yet, right?
Well, Eddie's gone.
We know that Eddie wasn't renominated, but you have others that terms are expiring that were renominated, but have not yet been reappointed.
You're asking about the recognition, or are you asking about the appointments?
The appointments.
That will be on December 7th.
Right. Well, I'm saying is we don't know who's...
I can't speak for the commissioners.
We don't know who you might be recognizing.
Who drew a two-year term, do they need to reapply, or have they reapplied?
They have reapplied.
Okay.
But not been reappointed.
Working on the recognition December 7th. For Eddie Arnold, though.
December 7th.
December 7th.
Pearl Harbor Day.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And yet.
If you want to know ahead of time, we're filing today, so you can look at the commissioner's backup and find out the decision that the ED staff has made. But you won't know the final decision until the day of December.
So you can tell us December now what's being posted today. Okay. All right. We'll check.
You guys.
We'll check this weekend.
Rules are good, aren't they?
Yes, right. Okay. I don't know if it's, I would classify this as old or new business, but it's probably recurring business, if you put it that way. The election of a chairman. I just wanted to say that last year, the election was in December in our last one of the year. So the term would start January. So, I've decided, and I've asked TSQ's staff, and they agree that since we're having a new committee member coming on from the school district, I thought it would be a good idea basically just to wait on that vote until I would like to have a meeting in January so we can bring him on and acclimate him to the committee, and we can have that vote at that time. I will say that, as I did last year, I'm not lobbying, I'm not campaigning for re-election. As far as I know, I'm available to be chairman again. But again, I'm not in a fight for this position. So,
I was just gonna say about your timing on that of January. If we don't have any business, I mean, I would just hate to have all these people drive in just for that. Unless you really think there's something we need to. I'm comfortable waiting until February or March to acclimate the new guy and to elect you as chairman again.
You're assuming you're going to be.
Yeah, you're
done.
If it gets us a more meaty agenda. If there's something though we need to address, I'm not against meeting in January, obviously.
Right. Okay. Well, let me ask you about the timing, since we are required by our bylaws to meet quarterly, at least once a quarter. January, February, March. And I suspect for Roland and for most of us that work property taxes, January might be a better time than February, March?
I would say January or February. I have 2 weeks blocked out in March, so.
Okay.
Bob, it's John Nichols.
Yes.
If you could coordinate the timing of that to be adjacent to like Texoga or some other meetings where a number of people may be in attendance, that would be a wonderful thing, I think, as well.
I will certainly check that, but realizing that most of the committee members don't go to a lot of the industry meetings that we go to. But it's
Tad's having a meeting in February also.
Okay. All right. And Roland, I still definitely want to check with you, especially since you have the longest travel. So if you'll tell me the TAD date, I'll be glad to consider that if it helps.
I'm flexible.
Okay.
That's not a problem. I don't know why. I do think that we need to have a chair as soon as possible, and I don't know if our bylaws would preclude us from doing that in a conference meeting.
Well, he holds over until a successor is elected, am I right? We have a chair.
He will stay over until he's officially re-elected.
I believe the bylaws, I think the bylaws say the election is once a year. So
I don't understand why I can't vote for chairperson today. I don't understand the logic of waiting or not.
My thought was just a courtesy for the new school district member.
You potentially have three or four new members of the committee coming on. I just think it's a matter of respect to those potential new members of the committee.
That, in fact, is not on the agenda, and we'll know definitely on December 7th.
Yeah, and how do you know one of those folks, new folks, they might really want to be chair and do a full court blitz?
They better be good.
All right. Any other old or new business? I'm kind of having them together here. I just mentioned the future meetings, and I hear you, Don, that we want something significant, prefer to have something significant to meet about, but we are required to meet once a quarter, too. So.
Well, I was thinking later in that quarter.
Okay.
But, listen, if y'all, I'm one of the easiest persons to get here, so y'all, whatever makes sense to you guys, especially those traveling, I'll be there.
And if Bennett's still on, I am very aware of those that miss meetings, that the bylaws say you can't miss too many meetings or you're automatically off a committee. So I do watch those stats, too, and make sure somebody's hurt. In other words, I'd probably give more preference to Bennett next time to make sure he is here or try to get him here. Okay. Any other comments from the audience? If none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Thanks for all your work on that, and have a great holidays, everybody.
All right. Thanks.
You too.
You too.